part two of the healing techniques, meditation and being yourself and having fun in Las Vegas, Nevada, in our seminar here. It's the afternoon session, and we're in the process of discussing part of the morning session. And so as you listen to this tape, you will have heard the morning session. And we're talking about Rachel, R-A-C-H-E-L, Rachel?
Mm-hmm.
Rachel, who was a beautiful young lady in her wheelchair. And I talked to her ahead of time, and she told me that she has a goal, a dream, and that her dream is to be a singer. She says, "You'll never guess what my goal is." And I said, "Well, I suppose your goal is that you want to be a great musician or a great, what did I say, something of that nature." And she says, "Well, that's close. I want to be a singer." And I said, "That's beautiful." And I said, "You know, it's not the body you live in that you're a singer in. It's this, the heart and soul that you're living in that you're a singer in." And she liked that. And so then as we were talking during the lecture, I mentioned to her that she was beautiful and she was fantastic and that she could be whole and perfect as she put the cause in motion, that I'm whole and perfect. And anyone here looking at the appearance would say, "She's got a great appearance to work with." A great mm-hmm. appearance. But, so then I said, within a very short time, you will have your wholeness. You will be walking again. You will be experiencing your perfect life. And she says, "May I say something?" And I said, "Of course." So Ellen held the microphone as she spoke. And she said, "For years," she is maybe about 30 years old, wasn't she? Something like that. And she says, "For years, I have been wanting more than anything in the world to walk." And she says, "I went to the doctor last week, and the doctor says, they have a new surgery technique that they can redo her hip bone, which keeps her leg out of joint, and they can move the other leg so that it faces forward and she can walk on it, the foot, not a sideward going foot, and they can do this and that and the other thing." And she says, "And Tuesday, I go in for the operation. And the healing should not take long at all." And she says, "I am so eager to be walking again." And she says, "You have made me so happy here today because you have fortified my belief in what the doctors are going to do by saying that in a short time I'll be walking without even knowing that I was going to be having this operation, without even knowing that that was what was going to happen." And of course, this is what is true for all of us. When we look at our divine self, when we look at who we really are and always speak from that awareness, we are all things. We are the wholeness. We are the purity, the perfection. We are that fulfilled right now. But can we hold true to it? And this is another area that we were talking about. Now let's look at the role of meditation in my life. What do I think about 24 hours daily? Meditation stabilizes. It stabilizes me in every manner. Meditation opens the inner me to the outer. Meditation is my shopping basket. Okay. What do I think about 24 hours daily? That's a good question. What do I think about 24 hours daily? Do I think that I am in Bernie Whelan's office, that I'm operating Bernie Whelan's business, that I'm doing Bernie Whelan's job of being a counselor and a sharer and the beautiful things that he did for people? Or am I a new person coming in, bringing new ideas and bringing a new direction, not based upon any particular thing except on who I am? And this is what I was working with Alice on, to recognize that she is not going to be a Bernie Whelan. She never could be and never would want to be. He was a unique and a special person. She's going to be, or is, Alice Lou Gowan. She is Alice. And as Alice, she's going to work with people. Now, Alice still smokes cigarettes, and she's teaching people in her clinic how not to smoke. And you might say that's ludicrous. But we know a phrase that we use in Unity, yes, Unity. Long time since I talked to you, Unity. Okay, she knows what we teach in the University of Healing. We teach best what we most need to learn. Have you heard that?
Yes.
Good. We teach best what we most need to learn. So she is going to teach, or she is teaching, that we do not need to have the habits that we have. We can be master of our habit one at a time and be totally in charge. So she has been master of many habits. She is master of the habit of needing more than one man in her life. When she was a teenager, she had lots of men in her life, didn't you? When you were a teenager, you had lots of boyfriends.
No.
I had lots of girlfriends. You didn't have lots of boyfriends.
Me too.
One boyfriend?
I had one boyfriend.
You had Ken when you were a teenager?
No, I had a boyfriend when I was 13 up until I was 21.
Like her daughter.
And then from 21, I left Illinois and moved to Colorado and married my daughter's husband.
Married your daughter's husband?
My ex-husband.
Yes, nice. You didn't have to do much research to come up with the best, did you?
No, I didn't.
Well, most of us did a little bit of research.
Yeah.
Having many wonderful girlfriends in our life or boyfriends in our life. But that's great. That's great. Okay, now, what do you think about 24 hours a day? And if you think about having a boyfriend or a girlfriend 24 hours a day, you will have a girlfriend or a boyfriend. You'll have the perfect one. If you have that in your consciousness. Now, how do you define the perfect boyfriend or perfect girlfriend? You say, I... Don't add me, because I'm still looking. No. You have the perfect girlfriend or perfect boyfriend in your life by saying one simple thing. Tell it to me. Say it loud enough.
I have the perfect boyfriend.
Right. I have the perfect girlfriend. What you say in your life about whatever it is, I have the perfect girlfriend. I have the perfect boyfriend, okay? Why is it that simple?
Because the principle is so simple. Yes.
Because you let the principle manifest the perfect being in your life. You put the cause in motion, and you get your bloated nothingness out of the way of the divine circuits. Remember that phrase? Mm-hmm. Well, Emerson, yeah. Ralph Waldo Emerson had that as one of his phrases. Get your bloated nothingness out of the way of the divine circuits. In other words, when you put the law of cause and effect in motion, don't get in and tell the law of cause and effect how to operate. Because the minute you start telling the law of cause and effect how to operate, you stifle it. You stop it from fulfilling its purpose for you. Now, if you keep going back and lifting up the dirt over your seed, the seed's not going to grow very fast. If you keep going into your gas tank and sticking your nose in there and pouring it all out and measuring the gas and putting it back in again, you won't get very far. You see, you have to believe. Now, about the gas tank, what do you believe? I believe the gas gauge is proper. I believe when the gas gauge says I have a half a tank, I got to have a tank, you know? I believe when the gas gauge says it's a quarter empty, it's a quarter empty, you know? And of course, if you have our car and you just look up above and it says you have 350 miles to go before you need a fill, if you're driving in the way that you've been driving. So that's nice too. And then, of course, the gas tank says down here, I want 25 gallons. Wow, you know. And so it's great. It gets us all the way from Campo to here and a little further. But believe in the principle. Now, is the gas gauge a principle? Very much so. Whatever you think about 24 hours a day is what you empower to be your reality. Now, yes, sir.
Yeah.
And please speak loud enough so I can understand.
I didn't mean to interrupt, but...
Well, then why did you raise your hand?
Because I got something to say.
You got something to say. Is it something I want to hear?
I hope so.
Well, then why do you think you didn't mean to interrupt?
Because I believe that is important on the subject.
You believe what?
I believe it's important on the subject.
Well, why don't you say it?
Okay. You said...
I'm giving you a hard time.
I know, I love it. That's
you love it.
The words that I heard was, if you believe in the principle, it works.
No, I didn't say if you believe. I don't mean to say that. The principle works. And if you put your full attention on it, it'll work. But the thing is, what I'm saying, if you believe the principle works, and then you start putting your consciousness on something else, you start saying, I wonder if there's gas in there. I wonder if the gauge really works. Maybe the gauge doesn't work. And you begin to have doubt in there.
That's the part. So now, instead of, okay, well, so
believe. Good question.
Once the belief is already established, it is the knowing that it's going to work, that it works, believing.
Well, knowing is a far better word than belief any day.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And when you say, I know that I know that I know, the divine in me knows the answer.
Okay, that's what I was saying.
Yeah. And when you say, I know that the gas gauge works perfectly, but how do you know?
Right.
I believe in it. I know it. I have confidence in it. Mm-hmm. It has proven to me that it works. Because when the gas gauge said empty, and I tried to go further, it just didn't go. I had to get a reserve someplace.
So that part, if you don't trust your divine self, or learn to trust your divine self, you're in a constant state of belief and not knowing.
Well, you don't want to say if you don't trust your divine self. Your divine self doesn't need to be trusted.
Okay, that's
the part. Your divine self just is. It just exists. Yeah, it just is, and it always follows through. It always carries out, regardless of whether you believe in it or whether you want to have it be true or whether you wish it were true. And this is where people get into trouble. This is where people, and that's why I want everyone to be very definite on it. Your office is your office.
Yes.
And your house is where Ellen lives.
Mm-hmm. My house is my house.
Your house is where Ellen lives. Ellen lives at your home. You don't at your home. Ellen lives in the house you think you live in. Ellen is your husband's wife. Yeah?
Uh-huh. Of course we're all one.
Of course we're all one. No, but the thing is, if you allow a little seed like that to get in you and mess you up, it can destroy you until you think that your husband's having an affair with somebody else, you know? And you see, if you're not pure in your consciousness, doubts again, if you're not pure in your consciousness all the way on whatever is your choice, then you got troubles.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the troubles are not any realer, any more real, than if it was just the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to believe that this is my home and Ken is always there when I come home or whenever I go out, Ken goes through the house quickly and cleans up the whole thing and makes everything look so nice because he says, well, I had to pen the dogs down, you know, blah, blah, blah. But you see, your house is your house where you dream. Your house is your house where you think your thoughts of wholeness and purity and right action. Now, does Ken think that you're the greatest thing since the popcorn, you know?
Yes.
Okay. Now, does Ken think that you live in your ideal spirit, mind, and body? Yes.
Yes,
he does.
Now, if you think that Ken doesn't think that, you empower that as a doesn't think for your thought. And you don't want to empower anybody thinking anything about you that you don't want to have happen. You only want to empower the thoughts that are about you that you want to have happen. Now, let's look at that very carefully. It is just an illusion of you being well or sick, rich or poor, friendly or not friendly. It's an illusion. And why not make that illusion whatever you want it to be? And you make that what you want it to be by 24 hours thinking about it. That doesn't mean 24 hours. That means 24 times 60 times 60.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Now that's a heck of a lot of seconds.
Yes. And oh, so, yes.
Yes, yes. And so you're thinking of all those seconds that I have the greatest house in the world. I have the greatest husband in the world. I have the greatest body in the world. My body is the temple of what? Come, come. Of the living spirit.
Am I a living spirit? Yes.
Yeah, my body is the temple of the Holy Ghost. No, my body is whole and perfect.
My
every organ.
Organ action and function in my body is whole and perfect now.
Now, this thing can hear you if I put you onto
conference.
But well, let's put it on conference because we're sort of talking together here. And when you put it on conference, it just brings everybody in. Mm-hmm. Really beautiful. Okay, now, how is your body?
My body is whole and perfect. Every organ action and function of my body is perfect now, right now.
Yeah, and?
Whole and perfect, all in divine order.
And?
I live in my ideal
state. That's only 2-3 seconds now. Come on. And. You see what I mean? And.
I love me. I am
but
God.
But do you understand?
Yes.
24 hours?
Yes. Oh, I know. Yes.
That means 60 minutes? That means 60 seconds every minute?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you say these things and you affirm. Do you think that they will work? My goodness, will they work?
I know.
But the thing
will.
Is, do we have the power to say it that often?
So it is.
Are we distracted? Do we let ourselves get called away? Now, I'm going to tell you another little thing that I've told you before, perhaps, but I'm going to tell you again. I teach the 3-hour meditation. The 3-hour meditation, the first hour you say, I am God. I'm God, God I am, I'm God, God. Second hour you say, why I can say I'm God. Those two are not too hard. The third hour, you listen to the divine in you, responding to you and saying that it is God and that you are God and that you're wonderful. The divine just talks to you just like you talk to yourself. Okay, now, if you can do that every time from 3 to 6, every day for 6 solid months, if you can do that without falling asleep, yeah, if you can do that, then you will have spiritual illumination. Now, do you want spiritual illumination?
Yes.
And this is what you say you do. How much are you willing to pay for it?
Oh, that's good.
3 hours a day, that's all I ask. 3 hours a day. 3 hours a day of staying alert. Now, why would you fall asleep? Because you're bored. You'd fall asleep because you're not interested. Now, you know our lovely Ingeborg? Ingeborg is a great lady. She is a great lady.
Yes.
And I am giving my lecture. Look, I'm giving my lecture. And her head gets lower and lower. And I say, Ingeborg! Ingeborg! And then Ingeborg gets, oh yeah, I wasn't sleeping. No, I wasn't sleeping. No, I wasn't. You know how we do. And I said, Ingeborg, we're going to have a movie tonight. And here we had a long day, busy day, you know, and everyone's tired at the end of the day, but we're going to have the movie at 6 o'clock and have our dinner while we watch the video. And so Ingeborg is sitting there watching the video, you know, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, alive and alert, you know. And it's not that she needs to sleep, you understand? It's not that she gets a little bit bored. And she has heard me now for 20-some years. And I mean, you're a very patient lady. Very wonderful to sit and listen to me for that long. But and I say, Ingeborg, do I bore you? Oh, no. Everything you say is so great. I said, Ingeborg, how would you like to give a lecture a couple times? You know, maybe you could give some good lectures. And everyone sparkles. Oh, no, you go ahead, Herb. But you see, that's work, too. So why does Ingeborg fall asleep when I'm giving a talk about sex? Or about other neat things, you know. Real dynamic stuff. You've heard my talks, and you've heard some of them. I may be a little sleepy, but most of them are pretty live wire talks. And she falls asleep because she has lost interest. Or she may have taken one point that I was talking about and started to meditate on it and think about it. I might say, and when you were a little child, you used to be loved by your mommy and loved by your daddy and then taken care of and you'd take you on vacations and they really cared about you. Well, this is the kind of unconditional love. And so she's off. Ah, yes, my mom and dad. Ah, yes, my mom. I used to go into her arms off, and then off she is in that experience. And We cannot allow ourselves to play with the concepts of the talk while we're doing it. Otherwise, we'll drift off into dreamland. We'll drift off into meditation, remembrances, you know, and we'll not be with the current activity. And this is what happens in the three-hour meditation. In the three-hour meditation, the God in you says, "You're wonderful. Oh, you're wonderful." Yes, it does, you know. And so you're sitting there and you say, "Yes, I'm wonderful." And it's a nice thing, you know, but still, it puts you to sleep. And you must stay awake, not because it's important to stay awake, but because that's part of the test. That is part of the test. Now, I could make the test, who could fall asleep the fastest, you know, or something like that, but that is part of the test. Now, the three-hour meditation is developed over many, many scientific principles and over many psychiatric and psychological principles and techniques of doing these things, and it functions. And I have had many people who have done it and who have experienced spiritual illumination. And then if you're like Ellen, you say, you know, like a hoot owl. tell me who they are. And I say, "Ellen, it wouldn't make any difference to you. Because you wouldn't remember that they were ever here. Because they achieved the goal of spiritual illumination that they were after, and they became invisible to our memory." Does that make any sense to you? They became invisible to our memory. If you have a spiritual healing, whatever was wrong with you, no one will ever remember that it was wrong because it was a spiritual healing. Mm-hmm. And you are completely released of all that condition forever and ever throughout your entire lifetime. Say, for instance, you had short legs, you know, and you have this spiritual healing, and your legs are the perfect length, you know, both are the same length long. And then you don't even remember that they were ever short. And the step further is that nobody else remembers that they were ever short. Your mother and dad, they don't remember they were ever short. Your doctors, they don't remember they were ever short. Your brothers and sisters, nobody. And that's a spiritual healing. Well, now, that's the type of thing that happens when you have spiritual illumination. When you have spiritual illumination, you have no memory of ever being different. Would you like to have memory of before your spiritual illumination and after it? You're nothing. You're nothing. People can tell those stories from now to the beginning of time. And it won't mean anything.
So you say for 3 hours, for 6 months.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Okay. Do you have our little booklet, 3 Hour Meditation?
Yep. And if you fall asleep, even on the last day of the 6 months, you have to start over again.
Isn't she aware? If you fall asleep even on the last day, the 13th hour, then you begin again. But that's what it is. And you see, you do have the motivation to remain alert. You do have the motivation to remain listening. Now, just as a humorous little aside here, this fellow was walking across the street and he saw this beautiful girl. And he says, "Oh God, I'd love to kiss that girl." And God says to him, "Go ahead." And he runs over and kisses the girl, and she whams him with a knock-a-doo, and he goes flying across the street, and he gets up, and he says, "God, I thought you said I could kiss her." "You weren't listening. I said, you can kiss her, but she'll knock you across the street if you do." You know, we don't listen long enough. And when we listen in our three-hour meditation, when we listen to what the divine in us has to say, we change our entire life. We change all the things we've been doing. We change all of our modus operandi in the manner of we are conducting our life and we're conducting our affairs and we're thinking about other people. We're totally different people. When we do the three-hour meditation in its dedication, because the three-hour meditation is not to change us. The three-hour meditation is to be us. We listen in the third hour to the divine in us talking, saying, "This is, you know, this is your real forte. This is your real goal, gift, desire, direction in life. This is it." But you don't have to do it. I mean, the divine in you never forces you. It merely holds out this plump in front of you and says, this is your real self. Yeah. You're like a puppy dog going after a cookie, you know. And this is your real self. This is your real self. And you see, if we do not give 100% of ourselves to this, then we may pick up something other than our real self. And you may say, well, I always wanted to be a writer. And your divine self says, well, go and write. You can write. Go and write. But if you do, you'll do it for a short time, and then you go on into what you really want to do.
Yeah.
What do I really want to do? Well, you don't really want to know yet, because you think you want to be a writer. You see? And now I'm going to tell you this point, and this will give you hope, but it is rare. You can do the 3-hour meditation, and at the conclusion of your first 3-hour meditation, you can have spiritual illumination absolute. If you are so one-pointed and so tuned in, however, if you're not so one-pointed and so tuned in, you will not have that experience because of one thing. Because you're not listening. You see, what's going to happen is that the divine in you is going to be saying the same thing over and over and over again. And then you're going to hear it different. You're going to hear it like I heard him. I heard him, what did I hear him say?
Hope.
I heard him say hope. And what did he actually say?
Aho.
Aho. He actually gave us an Indian word meaning aho. Now what does aho mean?
I am here.
Hmm?
I am here.
I am here. And what does that mean? I am living in the present. I am living in the present. Ellen, did you want a goodie?
Yeah.
I am living in the present. And I have a goodie in my pocket. A throat lozenge, you know. And so I am living in the present. And that's a beautiful thing to do. Now, can you live in the present? And what happens when you live in the present? When you live in the present, you are your divine self right that minute, complete and whole and perfect. With nothing added to it, nothing taken away from it, you can have that experience right at that moment. Now, why don't we do that? Why don't we have that experience? We don't have that experience for one simple reason. All of our life, we have been taught to be half-assed. We have been taught to listen only with half an ear. We have been taught to not be specific. What did you say? He said, aho. What did you say? He said, aho. Did you say, I hope? He said, no, I said, aho. And, well, what in the hell does aho mean? Aho means I am here. Ooh, what a nice statement. Huh?
Oh.
Oh, what a nice statement. I am here. And what does I am here connotate? I am here. I am alert. I am listening. I am aware of everything that is being said. I am divinely inspired to be all that I have the capability of being right now. That's what aho. That's what aho means, you see? And so, what does he say? Aho. So, you see, you're one-minded guy. Do you think that he'll arrive at that state of spiritual illumination? Mm-hmm. Might he perhaps already be there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If he's already there, what's he doing sitting here?
Kidding us.
What he's doing, he is being like the bishop's wife. Remember the bishop's wife, the movie where the angel came down and helped the bishop to get his church and stuff like that, you know? And and then the angel fell in love with the bishop's wife. Naughty, naughty. But when we do this, we are living in a state of absolute magnificence. We're living in a state of absolute awareness, because we are achieving it in the aho symbol, where I am here. I am present in the awareness of my reality, of my divinity. So, in the three-hour meditation, the first hour we say, I'm God, God I am, I'm God, God I am. The second hour we say, I am God, God I am, since that's all there is. There is nothing else in the universe but God. There's nothing else in any stone, in every rock, in every atom, in every breath of air. Whatever there is anything of, that's God. And if whatever there is nothing of, that's God. God is the allness and the nothingness of the universe. And you see, this is what you say to yourself in the second hour. You just become very literate, very aware of what divinity means and what God means. And then the third hour, that's where you sit and listen. And you quietly listen. You quietly listen to what your inner divine self says. And your inner divine self says something like this, Rhonda, you have been acting like a silly girl. Rhonda, I love you. I think that I'm happy that I chose to be in you and be as you. But Rhonda, whenever you say, I haven't got what I want, I want what I haven't got, I'm chasing after what I haven't got, and I haven't got what I want, oh, I haven't got what I want, and I haven't got what... Rhonda, you keep saying that, and I'm trying to give you what you want, but you run away from it by saying, I haven't got what I want. Now, Rhonda, what do you want? And it doesn't wait for your answer, because it's telling you. Rhonda, as I perceive you, your divine self says, as I perceive you, what you want is you want to live in a world of perfect harmony. You want to live in a world of peace, a world of joy, a world of abundance, a world of wholeness, a world of perfection. And Rhonda, that already exists. Mm-hmm. Now, when you open your eyes to the fact that it already exists, then you'll have it. Until you open your eyes to the fact that it already exists, you're going to chase it. And you'll never catch it because you've already got it. Mm-hmm. And if you try to catch a ball that you've already got in your hand, it's not in motion, and there's nothing to catch. You got it. So now start recognizing that you got it. Start recognizing that the universe is talking to you. You know what I mean?
Yes, Matt.
And then say, listen. And then Rhonda said, oh, I've had enough of that. I can't take it anymore.
she
goes off to sleep. The last day, yeah.
I'm taking it.
I teach for the week-long seminar. Every morning, from 3 to 6 in the morning, I give the three-hour meditation. And in the three-hour meditation, I have people help me sleep on me, you know. But I wake them up. And I should use that big gong.
Yes?
By the way, we will have our 30th anniversary this year. And we have two times set up a time. One is in... the end of July, the other is from the 7th of October to the 15th of October, where we have a one-week master seminar with the three-hour meditation in the morning, and then the last day we will have the celebration of the uni. So everybody who is interested in the three-hour meditation will have a taste of it in these 2 weeks which we have set up on campus this year.
Now, with the three-hour meditation, do you set the clock to go off each hour?
You set the clock out in front of you where you can see it, and you have a candle there if necessary, and then you can see it, and you're awake, you're not asleep.
Oh, you don't have your eyes closed?
Well, hey, why have your eyes closed? You're by yourself. You don't have your dog in the room. You don't have that mutt in the room. You went in for your treatment last night, and you took the mutt with you, and that was a no-no.
He
lay
there.
That doesn't matter. Yeah. He's there, and he's a distraction by his very presence. He's not a bad guy.
Okay.
But you shouldn't have goldfish in the room. You shouldn't have turtles. You shouldn't have dogs. And you shouldn't have wives or husbands.
No flies.
No flies.
I have to keep my cat in the closet.
Well, whatever, whatever.
Okay, so this morning, this morning, I stretched out on the floor, my dog was up on the couch, I need to go in and close a door somewhere and be by myself.
I don't care what you do.
Nobody can be present.
It's best.
Nobody.
Okay.
Now, this is 3-hour meditation.
Okay.
Now, if you are doing treatment work for yourself,
okay,
it's best that nobody worry you out. Because their consciousness, she's doing treatment work because she's sick. She's doing treatment work because she's got problems. She's doing treatment work because she isn't whole and perfect like me. You know, not that people do that, but that's what they do.
Yes.
And don't let anyone know. This is my private time,
right,
my meditation time.
Right.
And they don't need to know what you're doing.
Mm.
Because if people know what you're doing, they will say, he's in there, you know, having his 3-hour meditation, and he thinks that he's going to be spiritually illumined. Ho, 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 ho. You know, like that. And people do that. Yes?
It says, keep your plan secret.
Yeah.
Fortune cookie.
Yeah. Yeah, she had a fortune cookie for lunch, and it was, keep your plan secret. And hers is she's going to take a vacation.
To Las Vegas.
To Las Vegas. She's already got that.
Yeah. Maybe you got a new one.
In our timeshare.
That's but, good, right? But also the first hour, instead of saying it, we can sing it.
Yeah.
I am God.
Instead
God
of saying it, I can sing it.
Yeah.
I can.
I.
Always say first person, yeah, then positive. And in the first hour, you can sing it, you can say it, you can do anything you want, because it is just a matter of putting this into your consciousness and having this be a realization within you. And then the second hour, you can do the same thing. But usually I get literary, you know. And when I'm doing this for the group, like at Monterey, I have to say all sorts of things. And oh, I have some things that I say that are just really stupid. I like them. And then the third hour, you should be quiet and listen. But they said, what do we listen to? So then I play God, which is not hard to do. And so I am playing God as talking to myself. And so I let them listen to God talking to me. And Herb, you're a fantastic guy. Herb, you are so intelligent. Herb, you are a blessing to all the world. Herb, it is a joy to be expressing myself as your divinity. Wow, you know, and everybody's sitting there, me. But that's great. And this is the way God talks to us, with our own voice, with our own attitude, with our own stupid, brilliant, glorious, ignorant attitude. Who are you in your mind? Who do you believe you are? Do you believe that you are the fulfillment of everything good and beautiful? Or do you believe that you're a problem? Do you believe that the world is a big hang-up? A lot of people do. And you know who some of the people who are the worst at believing the world has a hang-up? The ministers, the priests, the church. And you know why? Remember this now. It is not against the church in any way. That is not against religion. If I build a church and I have 100 pews, 1,000 pews, or whatever, I like to fill them every Sunday with members who are paying tithes to help maintain the organization. And if I don't give you a program where I have residualism, where you come back again and again and again, then I won't stay in business. A lot of churches went out of business because nobody attended anymore, because the church wasn't giving them anything. And so the church tried to say, if you don't come, you're a sinner, and you're going to hell, and you're going to do all these things. And the Bible, Jesus never said anything. Jesus never even had a church. He said that Peter was the rock upon which he was going to build the church, which is the church of confidence, the church of belief, the church of love, the church of truth, the church of goodness within every man. Now, the ministers wanted to build a church where people would support their idea. Now, who said they needed a building? Where did Jesus hold his services?
Outside.
Outside. Now, did Jesus teach in the synagogue? No, he was a rabbi, and he taught in the synagogues, but the thing is, that was not his big show. His big crowds were out in the hillsides, mm-hmm. the 5,000, you know. In the synagogues, how many people did they usually encompass in there? And did the women go in the synagogues? Did the children go in the synagogues? Mm-hmm. Just the old bucks, you know.
Yeah.
And so, and were these guys listening to Jesus? Who was it who listened to him? The other priests. And they were listening to him because they wanted to catch him and find him incorrect. And they could not find him incorrect. So, but my point is this. Each one of us are contributing to our churches throughout our lifetime. Methodists, Lutherans, Catholics, you know, Mormons, whatever churches there may be, Hindu, Buddhist, so that they can have a building. Now, the priests are not going to build these beautiful symbols, are they? They're going to have the money from their membership to build it. And this fellow who runs this place, he didn't take his own personal cash and buy these things. He had the membership buy them. It came from their offerings and their gifts to the organization. It says right here, give your gifts here, which is beautiful. And so these are the symbols of this religion, and that's a very glorious symbol. And the Christ, the cross, is what they use for Jesus most of the time, which is a very interesting symbol. They should have used the resurrection, you know, but that's what the thing was all about.
I've always felt that.
Yeah, that's what it's all about, the resurrection. Nothing more than that. And you see, because of that, they wanted people to give donations. The church should be this. You go to church to learn about God in you, as you, through you, being you. And you learn that you are God, and that everything you do is a reflection of what you as God are. And does the mother say, you're a naughty boy? Because as a boy, he is reflecting naughty attitudes. Not as a spiritual master, but as a boy, as a human boy, he's reflecting naughty attitudes. So, as a boy, I want you to straighten up. Now, if she were to say, now, as God, I want you to straighten up. Well, he could never be bad if he were being his God self. She could never make mistakes if she were being her God self. And that's beautiful, you know, fantastic. So, any church or any organization that teaches its membership that they are God, they're the creator of their world, and they should act like God, and they should be that in all things, and they should see everybody else that way. And what would happen? There would be no poverty, because people could not see other people being poor and being sad, because all the people would have sufficient to whatever their needs were. They would think their thought, the power of your thought, is done unto you according to your belief, and they would have all things they needed. If they wanted something to eat, I now have a wonderful lunch. I now have a wonderful supper. I now have a wonderful dinner. I now have a wonderful world I live in. I have a wonderful house, you know? And is it the bigness or smallness of the house? It's the love in the house that makes the difference. That's all that makes a house a home, is love. And you can have the biggest house in the world, and they're just really crummy, because they're not filled with love. What are they filled with? They're filled with gadgets and things like that, that say that this is wealthy money, this is great, and this is this, that, and the other thing. And that's stupid. That's absolutely stupid. Now, why is it stupid? It's stupid because of one thing. Because you're going to have to add more to it. You're going to have to get more furniture. You're going to have to get replacements. You're going to have to get this or that. I bought my dog a baby bed, you know, and he has this beautiful... First, I let him sleep on my bed, but when I went to bed at night, he had to go sleep on the floor. Well, then, Ellen says he should have a bed. So I went down to the doggy store to look at a bed for him, and the doggy beds are just as expensive as getting a baby bed, and they're not as comfortable. So I bought a baby mattress for him, and I put a cover on it, and so he's got this lovely baby mattress. And he wouldn't lay on it particularly. He'd lay on it when I was at the desk and he was there. So then I thought, well, in the other house, we have a beautiful hassock, you know, big like this here, wide, fluffy leather top, leather size, beautiful, you know, fantastic. It goes with the Davenport and his other chairs too. So I went over and I got that. And I put that for him right by the front door so he can have his station there. And he sits on that now and he looks out the front door and he sees everybody who goes by, if anybody goes by, and he watches the fish from there even. And then he gets up and he goes to his doggy door and goes outside. He comes back in with his sticks that he wants to chew up, and he gets on his beautiful, this beautiful expensive leather hassock, you know, and enjoys it. And I say, wow, isn't that wonderful? But what a good creator he is. You know? What a good creator. He creates me being the most wonderful parent that he could ever have, you know. His own father, back in Ramona, and his mother, they never did that for him, you know. They just gave him a bunch of brothers and sisters to play with. But, see, this is life. This is life. We are the master. So when the church teaches you to be the master of yourself and not need the church any longer, then it's doing the perfect job. If the church teaches you, you should go to church every Sunday, you should do these things, then they have only taught you to be a good boy or a good girl. They have not taught you to be a spiritually illumined being. Once you learn how to be a spiritually illumined being, you don't need the church anymore. You don't need an outer temple. Because where did Jesus say the temple was?
Within.
Within. And where have we learned the temple really is? Within. Where do we keep our divine self? Within. Here or here or wherever, doesn't matter, wherever, you know, it's the total thing. Mm-hmm. So now, you're all familiar with biofeedback.
Mm-hmm.
And biofeedback, they put these little thermistors on you and it registers what your pulse is and what your attitudes are. And then when you are in various states of relaxation, it gives you certain beats and meters and readings. And so you learn that when you get into this alpha-theta state of deep meditation, that you have this certain rhythm and a certain beat. And then once you have learned to do that, you don't need the thermistors on anymore. You don't need to have the little temperature gauges on you any longer. You take them off and you say, I go into a deep meditation. And you're in it.
Mm-hmm.
Hypnosis is the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you are taught him the hypnosis. The doctor has you come in the office, and the doctor says, well, how are you today, Ali? And Ali says, I am just fine. And he says, well, chug-a-lug. And of course, how often does she hear chug-a-lug? Almost never. But the minute she hears it from his doctor, she is relaxation and off into her hypnotic frame of reference. And then he can work with her and he can say, well, Ali, did you behave? Were you a good girl this past week? Did you say I like me all the time? Did you say I'm holding perfect all the time? And then I'll say, well, sometimes I didn't. You know, she's got to be truthful, the truth serum sort of thing. But you see, this is what biofeedback does. It teaches you how to get into that deep state of inner awareness by yourself. Now, those are good things, but those are outward symbols. When you mentally get into your own inner self by saying, I am God, God I am, and be aware of your divine self and be aware that you're good, you're just absolutely good. You notice, you know, you're just absolutely good, then everything is perfect. But when you have to go back for a refill, you have to go back into the church. I'm sorry?
She might
keep... No. I'll go take care of that. Stay where you are. Stay where you are. I'm a big boy, and I know exactly how to handle this. See? Now, I don't have to go over high. I just go like this now. See? Perfect wave. You like that?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, when you can say to yourself, I am divinely illumined. You know, you're getting a better eye now, aren't you? I am divinely illumined. And mean that for yourself, then you move into that higher state of consciousness.
If you have to go back to church each Sunday, and the minister says, you have been a bad congregation, you have not given much on the offering, we don't have enough to take care of the church, now I want you to give more money, you know, and thanks a lot, Dad, you know, I got problems at home. and what is the church giving me that I should help support it, you know? The church only tells me that I'm supposed to be living after the teaching of Jesus, and I'm a sinner, and I'm unworthy of entering the kingdom of heaven. Hey, my wife tells me that all the time. I'm going out of here. You know? I don't need to hear that from you. You know, it doesn't mean a thing to me. You know, and why is it most men sleep in church? Because that's tradition. It's a tradition for them to sleep in church and not be touched by it. And after the sermon, the wife says, dear, it's over now. And he comes to him, good sermon, very good sermon, Pastor. You did a good job, you know. And the biggest idea what he said, which was perfect. Yes?
But his consciousness never sleeps, right? He just appears to be sleeping and still somehow filters.
You're going into this in a depth that I really didn't. Okay. Go into it. You're right.
Okay.
He heard what the minister said. He heard all the shit the minister has passed out. And he was just as upset about the minister as if he had been wide awake. But at least he could pretend he didn't know it.
Yeah.
You know. Your children. How often have they told you, I didn't hear you call, Mom. I didn't hear you call. I didn't know I... Yeah, yeah. Turn it off. I didn't know I was supposed to be home at 6 o'clock. 6 o'clock, you're supposed to be home at 5. We eat at 5:30. You're supposed to be home at 5. Why weren't you home at 5? And, I didn't know that, Mom.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And how long do we let them get away with that?
Too long.
Huh? Too long. No, what we say to them is, sweetheart, supper's at 5:30. If you're not here, we're eating at 5:30, and the restaurant is closed at 6. If you're not here in time for dinner, you don't get it. And mean it. And they're not going to starve to death, you know, but they'll learn real quick in a hurry. But my mother never had to do that with us five kids. We were always there on time, ahead of time, hands washed and ready for dinner, because we were hungry.
Uh-huh.
You know, we were living during the Depression times, and there wasn't a great deal of food. We were not poor of food, but we could have always enjoyed a little more, you know, especially more chicken and more of the other goody stuff that is available. But, you see, this is what we're taught to do. We're taught not to hear. Our parents teach us not to hear,
mm-hmm.
because they allow us to be saying that we don't hear even though we do hear. And this is what you do on your three-hour meditation. You don't hear. Because sometimes the divine in you says, so, you think you've been a good person, huh? Well, do you like yourself? Do you really like what you've been doing? Do you really like the things that you've been saying to other people? Do you really think that that's what I really want you to say? What I really want us to be known for, you know? And then the divine in you gives you a little shuttle, but hey, you can do the divine in you and the law of cause and effect work together, and they let you do whatever you want to do. And if you want to go to hell in a basket, if you want to be a drunk, if you want to be a smoker, if you want to be a drinker, and say that you don't want to be,
mm-hmm.
then that's stupid. But if you like smoking, and if you like drinking, and if you like doing what all other things might not be so good for you, hey, cool. Just remember, millions and billions of people have smoked all their life and never been, so to speak, affected by it. Why do some of our movie stars have, emphysema?
Yes.
I was thinking encephalitis. Emphysema. Why do they have emphysema? Because they smoke too much. And why do they smoke too much? Because people told them to quit smoking. And mm-hmm. because people told them that, hey, smoking is the right thing to do. You know, in the movies, you know, smoking is what everyone does. And smoke. And they started doing things that weren't what they wanted to do themselves. But in the early days, before movies, you know, like Sir Walter Raleigh, days and things like that, people smoked and they did things, and it never bothered them.
Mm-hmm.
And the body has the perfect ability to dump those things. I'm not recommending smoking. And the same with liquor. The body never is bothered by it. I had one little old lady who in Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin, I had a newspaper there. And I went out to interview her on her 100th birthday. And I said, "Well, lady, to what do you attribute your long life?" And she said, "Well, I have my jug of corn liquor here." And she says, "I have my corn cob pipe here." And she says, "I'm sitting here rocking on my porch." And she says, "But that's not it. I enjoy that every day. But that's not it." She says, "What I'm doing, I lost all my teeth. And I'm growing one a year back, starting on my 100th birthday. I'm growing one tooth a year back." And I said, "Well, why don't you grow them all back? You can do that, you know." And she says, no. "I'm going to grow one back a year." Now, how many teeth do we have in our head?
32.
Huh?
Depends on some people have.
Well, average.
Yeah, basically, we have
28 to 32.
26, I don't know.
All right. So let's just say we have 30 teeth. Okay. So she's going to live 30 more years. So she could be 130 years old. This is her mental concept for herself. Well, when she was about 103 or 4, is the last I heard about her, she's still growing the teeth.
Wow.
And doing just fine.
Wow. Hmm? Did she have 4 teeth?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I say, and yeah, every year she got another one.
Oh,
you know. And boy, every awesome. And that's cool. But why not? Why not?
Yeah.
You know? And the body has the mechanism to do this. The body has the mechanism to remain young forever.
Counting
her teeth. 16 and 16 are 32, right? Yeah. And Rhonda, you have 2 eyes. And 2 ears. But you see, this is the beauty of it. But now, Rhonda,
yes.
When you take drugs that you shouldn't take, like smoking or like drinking or like too hot medicines or too hot spices and stuff like that, you pickle your brain. Now, your brain can be pickled, you know, as they say, like a fried egg.
Like a who?
Fried egg.
Pickled like a fried egg.
Your brain can get pickled, or it can be like a fried egg. Yeah.
Okay, I hear that.
Thank you. You're wise to correct me on that. And the doctors report that if you will stop smoking, stop taking drugs, or stop doing those things that are dangerous for your brain recuperates.
I believe that.
Your brain goes right back to its normal. If you will stop smoking, your lungs will clear up in a matter of 2 or 3 years. In a matter of 6 months, they're back to a reasonable normal, and in a matter of 2 or 3 years, it's as though you had never smoked. Now, if you have this recuperative power, why not be whole and perfect? Why do you want any kind of drug in the first place? Why do you want nicotines? Why do you want caffeines? Why do you want Cokes? Why do you want coffee and tea? Why do you want these things that have these special things in them? Well, does it matter? You see, when we are living from our spiritual center, none of those things matter. What is the statement that Jesus made, Ellen?
It doesn't, it's not important what comes in the mouth, but what comes out.
Well, your first statement is better. It doesn't matter what goes into the mouth. It matters only what comes out.
Mm-hmm.
Because our words are the power.
Right.
Now, you will not destroy your body if you really know what you're doing. You will not hurt your body if you really believe that your body is beautiful and you are beautiful and it has a perfect, wonderful purpose. But if you're going to do those things and you think nothing of it. Now, look at these crazy, crazy Indians from Mexico, the native Mexican Indians, who eat these peyote seeds and so forth, and they chew them, and they chew them, and their teeth is loaded with it, and in Africa, the native African tribes, the native Indians in Africa, they use these various things, and they chew them, and they lose their teeth, and they should be, they should kill them. Because it's such a potent substance. And what do they live? 100, 150, 200? How old do the Hunza people live? The Hunza people are up in the Appalachian Mountains, up in the Himalayan Mountains, and they live to tremendously old ages, tremendously. Mm-hmm. And what happened to the Buddhist priests who were in the Himalayan Mountains as the Russian troops came through? They had this whole bevy of Buddhist priests that were there, and they were all lined up, and the Russian government ordered their soldiers to shoot these priests because they were teaching people contrary to the communistic rule. And so they were going to shoot these men. And one priest says, "Just a minute, I would like to get my shoes on." "Sure, go ahead." So he went behind the wall, put on his shoes, and came back out, and they shot him. And they shot them all. And then they went away because they did their duty. They didn't pick up the mess that they made, you know. They just went away. And so when the townspeople went up there to see what had happened, there were no dead priests. The priests were inside the temple, inside their cave, doing their normal things. It was merely an illusion that the Russians had shot. That was quite real to the Russians. And they saw the blood, and they saw those ripped up bodies with their bullets and so on, but it was merely an illusion. Now, when did the illusion start? When the fellow went back to get his shoes, you know? And he knew he had control of all of those men. He knew that. And this is what we do. We pretend that we have the illusion of reality in our body. We pretend that we have the illusion of being a master. But what did Richard Bach say about perfect speed?
Being there.
It's being there. And we are there all the time. Mm-hmm. Were you with me in the Himalayan cave when the Russians were aiming at these Buddhist priests?
Yeah.
Did you see their bodies starting to crumble and start to be ripped to pieces by the bullets? Well, if you did, you have that wonderful ability to see the illusions. Now, you have the ability to make those illusions and to live in those illusions. And when you have the ability to make those illusions and live in the illusions, you can also have the ability to change the illusions instantly. You know what the Buddhist priests could have done? They could have turned to their Russian captors, if you will, and said, "Peace. Peace." And then they could have said, "Go in peace." And you know what the Russian captors would have done? They would have gone down into India and gone off away from the type of philosophy that was not harmonious for them. They did not have to shoot anybody. They did not have to play any game.
Why didn't they do that,
these Buddhist priests? Ellen, they did it many times. How many times do you think those Buddhist priests were shot? You know, this is just part of the game. And it's part of the game. How many times do you think that Jesus was crucified? Ellen, tell me, how many times was Jesus crucified?
Every time I think of it.
And every time the Catholic Church has him up there on the cross, that's and right. You look at it, and every time you look at the Piazza, every time you look at any of this beautiful statuary that's done in that, you have reliving it. You're putting him back up on the cross or taking him down or whatever. You understand?
Yeah.
And it's continuous.
Yeah.
Now, can you see why it's so much more beautiful if Michelangelo, instead of having made these statues of Jesus on the cross, had made the resurrection, had made him standing on top of his tomb with the beautiful emanations of light shining out from everywhere on his being. Could that be possible? Wouldn't that be super califragilistic expialidocious? Now, when are we going to start that?
Now we're starting.
All right. Now, when are we going to start you standing on your tomb, radiant, alive, and sparkling with the light of your own divinity? When are you going to be on the resurrection of your old self? Now, you see, young lady, you make a statement, "I shouldn't advise on marriages because I haven't been lucky in marriages." Don't ever say that anymore. Say, I have the most beautiful relationships of anyone I can imagine. My relationships with everybody, husbands, with children, with family, with the world, is excellent. You're putting that cause in motion. You see, you don't need me. Once you put that cause in motion, you don't need me to remind you. You remind yourself. Mm-hmm. And you do it yourself. And you don't ever have to come back again to the psychological office. You know? You don't ever have to come back again to be treated, because you're treated. Now, wouldn't it be nice to go into the grocery store and buy some food once and be fed for a lifetime?
Great for the budget, too.
Great for the budget, yeah. But it's true. It's true. When you have taught yourself to go into the grocery store, if such is your game in playing, and you get the food, and there's no charge, I mean, you are always the winner of the month. the free basket of the month. And so you go in there, and you get your food, and bring it home, feed your family. Now, you read the life and teachings of the Master of the Far East, and Japheth and Jethro, had you been, and how they would lay their body down mm-hmm. and protect the community from the lions mm-hmm. that were coming around. Well, if they're so damn good, why don't they just say, hey, lions, you're lovers. Mm-hmm. You're lovers, Mr. Lions. You have no interest in human beings. You eat, it's true, but you eat animals, that which is part of your lifestyle, but not human beings, you know. Especially not humans from my community. Yummy, yeah. But you see, this is a beautiful thing. And why not put that cause in motion? Isn't that a lot more beautiful than laying down your body? That's a good symbol. Laying down on your body on the path so the birds mm-hmm. build a nest in your beard. But yeah. The thing is, that's silly. You know, it's okay, it's in the right direction, but let's take it the next direction. Now remember, when Emil was at the river, and Baird Spaulding wanted something to eat, you know, and he said, well, Baird, do you want some grain? Or do you want some grain that's made into dough, you know, what do you call it, into flour? Or do you want the bread that comes from the flour? Or do you want the bread with the goodies on it as a sandwich? And or do you want to eat the sandwich? Or do you want to have already eaten the sandwich and be satisfied? Yeah, neat, huh? And or do you want to be not ever needing to eat at all in the first place? Which would be real nice, you know? Now, what do you want? You see, when you can start to dream, when you can start to have your imagination going on these things, when you can start to going that all things are possible, everything that you're possible that you could have in your mind to think about is possible. When you're ready to realize that, it's yours and it's done. But you see, this is what happens on the 3-hour meditation. This is what happens on your introspective ability. When you can learn to be introspective, what does introspection mean?
Turn within.
Introspection means listening within. What does meditation mean?
To think about.
Now, the dictionary spells it out in these ways, and I think that's just a simple, handy way to do it. Meditation is so popular that people think that meditation is turning within. Well, it's not. It is, in a sense. We are thinking about something, so we have turned within to think about something. But it's not thinking about, it's not turning within and listening, it's turning within and responding to what we are thinking about. And to think about things is a very wonderful thing and a very powerful thing. But when we are turning within and listening, then the magic begins. Then the symphony of the eternal inner self begins to play. And you said you liked the French horn or something like that. You did. See, I was listening. You liked the French horn, and you thought that that's cool music. Well, that's the kind of music you'd be hearing in your soul. That's the kind of music you'd be hearing in your heart, and perhaps you do. And this is beautiful because you have chosen your instrument, if you will. You have chosen your style of music, your way, and this will always be a clue to you that you are in the right point in your consciousness. Make sense? When you hear that music, you're in the right point in your consciousness. When we hear music that is, to us, supportive and wonderful. We're at the right place. Whenever I hear classical music, classical Beethoven, Mozart, Bach, and what have you, I just feel, yes, you know. And my son listened to that all the time he was growing up. And he didn't know he was listening to it. He was just always on my radio, and he was hearing it. And then one day, I had a different station on, and I had some other music on, something maybe the Beatles or something. And so he came in and he said, "Dad, what are you listening to?" I said, "Oh, just some background music." He said, "Well, listen to the words." And I didn't. I said, "Oh, that's not too good." And he says, "You're putting that in your consciousness." I thought, son, you know. But, you know, they learn quick. And they tell us, don't they?
Yes, they do.
They tell us. And they remind us. And they remind us so well. And if we are humble enough to take that reminder and not say, "Oh, damn, shut up, get off my back," you know. And that's what they say to us. But if we could just say, "Thank you." And as I said to my son, I said, "Mark, I wasn't paying any attention. I was putting that garbage in my mind, and I don't really want that there." He says, "I know, Dad." He says, "That's what you told me, and that's what I understand." And so he changed, you know, and we listened carefully. Then when I went away to Minneapolis, and he was alone in our beach house, and he invited some of his friends to live there with him, and I came in one day as he was talking to the friends and telling them the rules of the house. Mm-hmm. And he says, "If my dad wants a beer or a glass of wine, he can have it, but we don't drink any liquor or alcohol in this house at all. If my dad wants his pipe, he can have it, but we don't smoke in this house at all. We don't smoke it. And there are no drugs in this house. There are da-da-da-da-da-da-da." And he says, "And if my dad wants to say damn or hell, my dad can say damn or hell, but nobody else can. Nobody. Nobody can swear in this house. Nobody can use bad language." I thought, wow, you know. And his friend says, "Amen," you know. And then one of his friends was very much into Hinduism. Very much into never eating any live thing. Not even bugs, you know. And he told Mark this story and sold in the bill of goods. And from that day, Mark only ate vegetables. From before that, he would never eat vegetables. Hamburgers, you know, hot dogs, anything meat, but nothing other. And from that day forward, he did not eat any more meat. And I didn't even know that he had made that transition. I invited him and his friends out to dinner when I came back for a visit and took him to a nice steakhouse, you know. And he says, "Dad, I'm vegetarian." I said, "You could have told me before I left it, but I'm having my steak, and as soon as I'm done, then we'll go over to your vegetarian. We'll try to have your vegetarian meals, because, you know, in a steakhouse, they only have peas and carrots and a few things like that. Not quite enough to make up a nice vegetarian meal." But, you see, we plant seeds. We plant them in our children. We plant them in our life, in our world, and they bring results for us. Now, let's plant them in ourselves knowingly. And if any of you have the courage, and it takes a lot of courage, if you have the courage to do the 3-hour meditation and you want to do it for 6 months, because it's demanding. You know, a lot of people, they say, "I want to be a minister. I want to have a church. I want to be a minister of God Unlimited. And I want to be a minister of God Unlimited. And I want to have a church." And I say, "Hey, great, that's super. And I want to, you know, give Sunday talks and stuff." And I say, "Do you like to travel?" "Oh, yeah, I love it." "Well, you can't do that, you know, if you have a church. If you have a church, you got to be there every Sunday. And you got to have a Sunday talk prepared every Sunday. It's got to be a good one. It's got to be something meaningful. And then you got to have Sunday school for the kids. And then you have to work with the choir. And you have to work with the women's group and the men's groups and the Alcoholics Anonymous and all these other groups, you know. Then you have to have the Boy Scouts and the Girl Scouts. Then you have to have the Friday night classes and the Wednesday night classes and the men's class on Tuesday night, you know, and the women's class on Thursday night. And, you know, and then you have to have the bazaars and you have to have all these things. Now, is that what you want?" And they say, "No, I just want to, you know, let's talk about the truth, you know, mm-hmm. rather than just be a lecturer.
Mm-hmm.
Just have yourself a place and rent it, you know, rent Carnegie Hall, you know, rent the Shriner Auditorium or something like that every Saturday afternoon, and have your people come there and fill it up, you know, and you give sparkling talks on sparkling things. But then that means, where are you going to find time to do your research and do your intellectual research and your checking on these things? Because that takes time. And then people say, well, Herb, why don't we have a television show, you know? Why don't we have a television station right on campus? I said, mm-hmm. that's good, but who's going to run it?
Huh.
Who's going to keep music on that all the time and keep talks on that all the time? I have hundreds of talks, it's true, but I don't think that people would like to listen to me day in and day out, you know, like that, as it is, three times a day that I'm giving these internet talks overwhelm some people. But be careful. What sort of a package you want to build up for yourself? Now, you have a school, and the school owns you, and it possesses you, and if you're not there, the school's going to die, because there's nobody taking the same interest you do. You can have a staff, and you can pay them, and they can be very helpful, but what do? They do it their way. And you say, but these are the ways that we have to do it, this is the rule. And they say, no, that's not really the rule. And you say, well, yes, it is, you know. And what do to you? They just say, you don't like what I do, I'm going to quit. And then they leave you.
And I should have been that lucky.
Yeah. But the thing is, having a school like you do, which is just a commercial school, is a very bothersome thing, a very demanding thing.
It's a really wonderful thing.
Yeah, but it's wonderful.
It's wonderful, but it is demanding.
Yeah. Well, what you have to do, you have to make sure you set time for yourself to be alone. Set time for yourself to be doing your own thing where nobody can reach you and nobody can get to you, and then have your school going. But really, what would be the easiest way to run your school?
You know, if you could figure that out, I want you to tell
it's
me.
It's five words.
Okay, what are they?
All is in divine order. Now, you're not going to worry about what the schedule is going to be. You're not going to worry about your teachers. You're not going to worry about your students. You're not going to worry about your building or anything else. You just say, all is in divine order. And when you say, all is in divine order, then you put it into divine order, and whatever is going to be the highest and best way for you to have that operation, will be done. Just that simple. And, madam?
Yes?
What is this 24-60-60?
Every organ function action of my
No, we're talking about her school.
Oh, all is in divine order.
Yeah, what's this 24-60-60 though? 24 hours of the day, 60 minutes, 60 seconds every minute. She has in her mind, all is in divine order. That's all.
Yeah.
That's all.
Basically, without really thinking those words.
That's what you did, huh?
That's what I do in practice, and you can see the manifestation.
Yeah.
Immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody.
Well, it's a principle.
Right.
And you are doing the principle.
Right.
So, now, I hear you very nicely. I hear you speak very nicely. Sometimes I hear Tony speak nicely, but a lot of times I don't hear him because he doesn't enunciate. And he doesn't enunciate because he's using, like, the Indian language or something, you know, and I don't understand that particular phrase. And you are a little mouse who is going to get eaten up one of these days, because you're not standing forth for who you are. Now, is your body whole and perfect?
Yes, it is.
I like that. Are you fabulous?
Yes, I am.
That's great. Now, stand forth for who you are and what you are, because the world only knows who you are and what you are by how you present yourself. And who is the world?
I am.
You are. So always remember, speak up. You're not speaking up so I can hear you. because I can read your lips. But you're not speaking up so I can hear you. You're speaking up so that you can share in our mutual conversation here on the tape and on the disc.
Oh, you want me to talk louder so you can hear? Okay.
That's what I said. I'm pointing to the machine here. I'm saying, here's the microphone.
All right.
Yeah, speak to the microphone, you know.
Okay.
I mean, I do point it out at you guys here.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Because you'll hear this on the internet. And when you hear it on the internet, you'll say, oh, God, I wish I'd talked up a little better. I like to hear myself coming through the internet, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe I'd rather not hear myself coming through the internet. But it's fun, isn't it? It's fun. Yes, Mr. Tony.
I got a story, what you're saying.
Articulately done.
That's right.
Yes.
It goes along the same principle. It is a principle. There was a one-legged dragon.
One-legged dragon?
One-legged dragon named Fu.
At Fu?
No. That name is Fu.
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 F-U-U.
Fu. That's correct. A one-legged dragon named Fu.
All right.
And all day long, he's trying to control his one leg. He's bouncing all over the place. So he's tired. At the end of the day, he's like, oh.
Doesn't he have wings?
No, he's a one-legged dragon. That's it.
He has. That's all he's got.
And he's bouncing around.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And his friend, his neighbor, Fong.
Yes.
The millipede comes that's over. Tough. And Fong just walks over all his million legs. And Fu goes, how do you handle all those legs? He wipes his head. Oh, so many legs. And Fong goes, I don't.
Very good.
I don't.
What did Fu get out of that?
To get out of the way.
He bounced out of the way.
Yeah.
That's great.
That's the principle.
And
to get out of the way, and the principle works.
You don't think about it.
Right.
You let it be. That's great.
Isn't that the...
Yeah, that's the point for us, too. As long as we're going to think about it, we're going to have problems with it. Now, mm-hmm. How are you going to run your school? All is in divine order.
Yep.
I get my bloated nothingness out of the way of the divine circuits and let it run perfectly and beautifully.
Right.
And what kind of students do you have in your school?
I have wonderful students.
Wonderful students. That's
right.
Great.
And you know what? I would say the majority of those students, when they initially came to me, were supposedly troubled students. I have never in 8 years had any problem with students.
Now, why don't you ever have a problem with students when everybody else does?
I think because of the fact that once the student walks into my facility, I love those kids, and I let them know that I love them,
mm-hmm.
and that the staff loves them, and they're welcome, and they're a blessing. And it makes all the difference in the world.
Now, would you describe to me a troublesome child? What would a troublesome child be? What would a troublesome child be?
In my school environment?
In any school environment. In the world.
Disruptive.
No.
Okay.
You don't know a troublesome child. You don't even understand what a troublesome child looks like.
I don't have any.
I know. I'm not trying to be that game. I'm playing another game.
Okay.
You don't know what a troublesome child is. You wouldn't recognize one if you saw one. Would you?
No.
Why? Because you're pure what? You're pure love.
Well, yes.
Yeah, you're unconditional love. You wouldn't recognize a troublesome, recalcitrant child if you saw one because you don't know them. That does not exist in your world.
And that is absolutely true.
What?
That is absolutely true. I don't recognize... They said that's absolutely true.
That's absolutely true.
Because
yeah.
I know when those kids walk through my door, I don't care what the title was that came along with them, I never hear the title.
That's right.
They're just great kids.
That's right.
They need some help.
Mm-hmm. They come to you and they say, I am ready to pass this course. Will you work with me? And you say, yes. You don't look at it and find out why they didn't pass it before. That doesn't help you to help them pass it now.
No.
The only thing that helps you help them pass it now is that you see them being good students.
Right.
And they are.
Absolutely.
Now, why are they good students? Why are they good students? Because you are.
Oh, okay.
I mean, they are good students because you are. And you wouldn't know a student who wasn't a good student. because you're a good student.
Yeah, that's true.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. But you see what I mean?
Yes.
See, if we constantly
that's
go back...
That's a reflection of me.
That's a reflection of you, totally.
Absolutely.
Okay. And you're magnificent. And everything you create is magnificent. You know, Tony works as a bartender. And he's got all these lushes coming up to him all night long. Oh, another drink, oh, another drink. And Tony says to him, you know, you're a master. And they look at him and say, I still want another drink. And you're a master. And everything you do is wonderful. And you can take a drink and you can drink it and it doesn't affect you one little bit, does it? You can drink a whole bottle of scotch and it doesn't touch you in the slightest, does it? And people say, what are you talking about? Nobody can do that, you know. Everybody gets crutchy when they drink. And no. Tony says, I serve special scotch here. It is so perfect that no one ever gets drunk drinking it. Every person who drinks it just feels happy and intelligent and wise and beautiful. And so the people come up to him and drink from his bottles, and they're untouched. They walk away like Indians, you know, like sober Indians. And they're just fantastic. And from the other bartenders, the people walk away and fall down and need to be picked up by the guards and by the patrol people and stuff like that. But from the area, and then Tony's boss comes up to him and says, Tony, you're not selling enough stuff here. Nobody's walking away from you falling over. And Tony says, look, my bottles are emptier than the other guys, you know. I sold more of this material than anybody else. And he says, well, so you did. How can you do that? Sell this stuff to these people and have them walk away sober as a judge, you know? And he says, because I tell them they are untouched by what they drink. It does not affect them. He says, well, give me a taste of that. So he serves his boss a taste, and his boss says, mighty good stuff, you know, real quality stuff.
Holy water.
Holy water. Well, you don't want to say that. That messed them up. No, that part's okay. That part's okay. But you see, when you are dealing with these people, you sell them any bill of goods you want, whoever you are. And if Tony wanted to, he could sell straight from his bottle and have it be pure water, and have them think that they're having scotch.
Exactly.
And he wouldn't change it. He wouldn't fill the bottles himself. It'd be the real stuff that he's giving to them. But he would be seeing them being untouched by the fluid. Now, can he do that?
Yes.
And will he do that?
Yes.
Does he do that?
Yes.
And is he a master?
Yes.
How long has he been a master?
Always.
And when will he stop?
Never. Because he's always.
You'll never stop being a master. When will you stop being a master with your students?
Never.
Never. Why should I, huh?
Right.
Never.
The best thing I've ever done.
Right. And when will you stop being a master with your clients?
Never.
What do you do for your clients that they can't have done anywhere else?
Nothing.
Nothing. Because they can have anything you can do anywhere else. And what do you give them that makes it worth their while to come and see you? You show them the way. You show them the way.
I give them myself.
Well, I wouldn't do that too much. But you show them the way.
Yes.
You show them the way. You see, yourself, you teach best what you most need to learn. And so you don't really want to give them yourself. You want to be yourself, and you want to let them be a reflection of who you are, and that reflection is wholeness and purity and goodness. But you want to be real careful about saying that you give them yourself, you know, because that could be misleading to your own thinking.
Sure.
And you could think that you're sexually involving yourself with people. No. But this is especially for a woman, and especially for a man, too. But what you want to do is always have them be your reflection. Just like Barbara, all her students are her reflection.
Right.
They're all 100% when they go back to any other school that they go to, the teachers look at them and they say, "Wow, where did you go to school? You're a super student. Where'd you go to school? You have the right attitude about education. Man, you're a blessing to my whole class. Would you like to stand up and teach?" And they say, "Yes, my teacher, Barbara, was Mrs. Rich. My teacher, Mrs. Rich, was absolutely glorious. And I worship her, and I respect her, and I honor her. And she is a real teacher. Why don't you have her come in and give a talk or two to the whole group?" You know. And then Barbara would say, "Oh, please, I've got enough to do." True. But never give up an opportunity to speak to others, right?
If it's appropriate, yes.
Yes, if it's appropriate, yeah. And that's a good word for it, if it's appropriate. And you?
Yes.
What are you doing having your world be as perfect as it can be? Now, what is it that you do for a living? Now, I don't want you to tell me what you think you're going to tell me. But what is it that you do for a living? Do you work with people? Do you work with ideas? Do you work with material? What do you work with for a living? Now, stop and think. What do you really work with for a living? What do you really work with for a living?
Principal.
Go on.
Principal. What I teach is what I'm learning myself, which is placing a cause in motion to create the effect of the desire I choose to experience in my world now.
All right, now, where do you have your studio? Now, be careful. I think you might have the wrong opinion. Where do you have your studio in which you do your teaching? Yeah, yourself, that's true, but where do you have your outward studio?
In my home.
In your gymnasium.
Ah.
Is this true? Do you do more work in your gymnasium than anywhere else?
Wait,
you see, start remembering that.
My creation.
Now, just a minute. Start remembering that, and remember that that also brings you an income.
Yes, it does. Yes.
Well, start realizing that. You don't need to have anybody in your home unless you want to.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to be in anybody else's home unless you want to.
Mm-hmm.
You have this large, beautiful theater in which you work, and you have people stationed on little stools here and there waiting for your attention, and you go over them as they're on the pushing bicycle or maybe pedaling or pulling weights or something like that.
Yeah, I shoot little seeds.
Yes, yes. And you sit there and you tell them how beautiful they are.
Yes.
And they say,
yes.
Oh,
it's
where do I send the check? But you see, this is what you're doing.
Yes.
That's your studio.
Mm-hmm.
Now, really?
Yes.
Really?
I
and
all the time.
Don't forget it.
Mm-mm.
You see, what you do in your home wouldn't pay enough to feed your mice. Right? Yeah. Yeah. But what you do in other people's homes for them pays very well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but what you do in your home doesn't pay enough to feed the mice, really. The amount of people who pay you a fee for the work you do with them in your home
mm-hmm.
does not pay.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes.
Yeah. Sometimes it's low.
Yeah.
Sometimes five
yeah.
bucks, sometimes two, sometimes ten. Sometimes whatever, but
mm-hmm.
really your big studio is the theater at the gym,
mm-hmm.
but your big money-making operation is your work in other people's homes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, start rearranging your activity, because you do most of your work in the gym,
mm-hmm.
and you like that location very much.
Mm-hmm.
So start recognizing that you are really doing a job there. You might tell the gymnasium that is your office.
I've talked to them about that.
What do they say?
They say, "Good, that'd be perfect. We'll set everything up for you."
Well, now, isn't that nice, you know? Isn't that nice? No heating bills?
No overhead.
And when you're done work, you got your private shower, and you have your swimming pool, perhaps, too, down there?
Not in this one.
Not in this one. Well, no, I haven't built one there for you indoors. But, and I may be sounding like I'm joking, but I'm not. These are very real things. These are very real things. Now, when you can begin to meditate on this, when you can begin to think about this, and then after you've done a good meditation on it, then quietly listen as the divine in you reveals to you the next step about it. And then the next step will show you what you should do next, how you should handle it, how you should go for it. Now, what do people say about Alice's office?
It's comfortable.
It's comfortable. You say it's comfortable?
I say it's very comfortable, yes.
Does Anthony say that's where you sleep sometimes?
No, my Anthony, he said that he can live in your office. I said, well, what does that mind? He goes, well, it's big. Al's got a couch in hers. he loves this.
You have a counseling couch, huh?
My daughter bought me a really neat couch cover for it.
Very
it's,
good.
It's very, my office is very nice. I've made it very nice.
Yes. And you do your work there. Are you a master there?
Yes, I am.
Are you a master wherever you are?
Yes, I am.
What does your daughter think about you?
My daughter loves me. My daughter thinks the world of me.
Your daughter thinks that you are a very competent lady.
Yes.
How many children do you have?
One.
And what do they all think about you?
My daughter?
They all think that you're a very competent lady, right?
Yes,
they
yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. 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 Now, does your daughter have friends?
Yes.
Does she send her friends over to you for counseling?
Not no. Yet.
But you can give her some of your business cards.
I can, yes.
And, hey, everybody is your agent.
Right.
Everybody's your agent.
Right.
Now, you see, Tony can give out your cards at the theater where he works at Caesars Club, right?
Yes.
You do?
What?
Okay.
Hmm?
I can give out my
her business cards. When somebody has a problem and need extra counseling, and unless you're setting up a paying counseling program yourself.
All the above.
Hmm?
All the above.
Oh, great. And where is your counseling center?
It's in my backyard.
Oh, you have a place. Oh, that's in your, not hot tub, but in your sweat lodge.
That's correct.
In your backyard. And do you have a special place where you serve them cocktails? And right away when we say cocktails, you think that it's liquor, but it's not. It's this pure H2O stuff that, you know, it gets
yeah,
they, and that's great. And how many people have you counseled there up to date, or is this something you're just developing?
No, half a dozen.
Huh?
Half a dozen.
Good. That's good stuff. And have you informed them that there's a certain rate or fee involved? Not yet, huh?
No.
Not yet. But it's good to do. You're worthy of your hire. You see, when we give seminars in Europe, and you say, my goodness, such big seminars and lots of people and stuff like that. Well, we charge. You see, it's $1,000 or better. And people come to those seminars and they are happy to pay for it because they get something, you know. And here we do too. But what is it that you want from the program, you know? So these are things that are very important, that we learn to charge for our services unless we put it into consciousness. And you say, well, I'm going to put it in consciousness. that's an easy way to do it. You just have anyone who comes into your program, they are trained to think, well, Anthony, you certainly were a blessing to me. What do I owe you? And you don't tell them anything. You say, give me what you feel the service was worth to you. And so then they write you a check for $600. Mm. And you say, thank you very much. You know? And then you say to them, well, or they say to you, Tony, Anthony, sir, what is the most that anyone has ever paid you for their services? And you say, Well, let's see. They do this in varying amounts. But the most that was ever paid to me was one person gave me $1 million. $1 million? My gosh! Yeah, $1 million. Man, and what did you do for them? I merely helped them to recognize that they're divine and they're beautiful and that they are worth being alive and they are worth being great people. Well, wow, I have to rethink who you are, you know. And then you say, well, Herb, I can't lie to somebody and say that they gave me $1 million. Well, I spoke at the Farmington, New Mexico church, and they'd had Edgar Mitchell and the other famous people there too. And so they said to me, well, Herb, your program was so good, I can't figure out how much I should give you. And I gave Edgar Mitchell $800, and what should I give you? And I said, well, Mr. Barnes, I said, why don't you give me a check for $30 million? And he says, oh, come on now. I said, sure, give me a check for $30 million. I said, then I can say I was paid $30 million for giving a talk. And I added that later, you know, but give me a check for $30 million if you think that I'm worth it. He said, well, I can't do that because you can't cash it. I said, that's no problem. I don't have to cash it. I just show it to them. I don't need to cash it. And people wouldn't cash it anyhow, you know. And I said, well, go ahead. And he didn't. He gave me a nice big check. And so I said to him, you know, if you had given me a check for $30 million, I would have given that check back to you, and I would have said, this is what I think of you, and I say thank you very much. Being here with you and sharing with you in your organization was worth $30 million to me. Here's a little gesture of it. And then you can say that you earned $30 million in one crack from one customer who came in and was so pleased with what was going on here. Now you say, oh, that's sort of ludicrous. That's a little bit touchy on the edge. And yes, it's touchy on the edge, but it's true. I'm in. But you know what happened after that? You want to tell them? You remember? With Sylvia?
Yeah, you tell them.
You tell them. I went home and I told the girls on campus. I said, I suggested he give me $30 million, and he didn't do that. And I told him I would have given it to him, and, you know, he could have said that. And so Sylvia, you know, big old smarty, fatty, happy, lucky, lovely Sylvia, who is, you know, yeah, she says, just a minute, Herb. She runs into her bedroom, gets out her old checkbook she hadn't used for years, and wrote me a check for $30 million, or more, she wrote it more, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And she gave it to me, and she says, here, Herb, thank you. Now, you know, I can say that I got a check for $40 million, you know, for one of my students who appreciated what I'm doing. Now, you say, well, gee, that's, you know, I don't say this many people. I tell them the whole story, and they get the whole picture. But the thing is, it's true. If you start getting yourself into this higher level of abundance, this higher level of value and worth that you are, you'll find that it starts coming to you. It starts demonstrating itself in your life. Excuse me?
Give and you get.
Give and you shall receive, yeah. But the thing is, giving is so wonderful. It's such a fantastic activity, and it's so exciting because
it's rewarding. It's rewarding because the more you give, the more you seem
that's
to get.
Right. That's right. That's right. It just floods back on you. It floods back on you. And I know I used to go around and speak at different churches, and I would take my airplane and I'd fly to these different churches because they didn't have a minister that Sunday, and that's great. They'd give me a nice big chunk of money, and then they'd say, well, I got to give you some money for your airplane too, you know, so that your transportation and stuff, you came up here. I said, well, whatever's right. And they'd give me maybe $2,000 for my flying up there. And it didn't cost that much, you know. It was my plane, all paid for. I paid worth $2,500 for the plane. But it was just wonderful. Just wonderful. But, people love to deal with an opulent person. They love to deal with an opulent consciousness. They love to have, my minister flew in just for the service today to our little country church here of 100 people, you know. And, you know, that's does a lot for their self-esteem. In fact, one church wanted me so badly, they gave me $1,000 every Sunday just for coming down and speaking to their church and putting on an hour television show, going over to the rest home for an hour for the people there, giving them a special church service, and operating the Sunday school, and having a science of mind class, and a few other things, you know, all in one day. But $1,000 for the day, which is not bad. And then this was all so popular, and people liked that abundance, and I told them at headquarters at the United Church about it, and so then they started sending me out to big churches, you know, even though I didn't want to go. And they sent me up to Minneapolis, and the thing was just absolutely fantastic. Just fantastic. And it just boomeranged in a lovely, marvelous way, as you say. You give and it just grows. It gives and it just grows. Now, I could tell you a lot of details about a lot of these things, but we get bogged down in those facts. And they were good. They were very good. But that's not where I want you to be in my consciousness. I want you to be in yours. I want you to think how abundant you are and how successful you are and how wonderful you are. It's great, isn't it? Okay, we'll take a pause for about 10 minutes and then we'll come back. That's good. So we come back about 10, 12 minutes after 4. And then we'll go on to 5. Good idea? Thank you. You're wonderful.